You're listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network, now the largest new media platform on the web and your number one source for after-show entertainment.
Very good, Dean
Johnson.
From the AfterBuzz Studios in Los Angeles, California, presented by Maria Menounos and Bing.com, and streaming live thanks to Akamai Technologies, this is AfterBuzz TV for Game of Thrones. We'll break down tonight's episode and get you all the latest news and gossip. If you'd like to buzz in on tonight's show, you can buzz us at 424-256-1729. That's 424-256-1729. And now, another post-game wrap-up show for your favorite TV show. It's AfterBuzz TV Game of Thrones.
It's back!
Yay!
It's back!
Yay!
Let's get some applause!
Woo!
Yes! I'm excited. Are you guys excited?
So excited.
Couldn't be more.
Awesome. I am Dave Klein, and joining me is the lovely Simone Boyce and Kristen Snyder. And in the booth with us, Ronnie Jr.
What's up, Ronnie?
What's up,
Ronnie?
What's up, everybody? You guys bring the heat. I know you guys are huge Game of Thrones fans.
Yes.
The only thing that we...
President nerds.
Yeah. No. It's good. It's good. The only thing we want our Game of Thrones fans to do as far as support us at AfterBuzz is go to our iTunes page. Go to our iTunes page, rate and comment the show. That's all we ask. Other than that, Dave, Kristen, and beautiful Simone, make it happen. I mean, you guys are excited the show's finally back.
Oh, yeah. So finally, excited, Ronnie.
My life doesn't go on without Game of Thrones.
Right?
So
it's
my been quite boring.
Let me tell you guys, it has been a year long, too long of a wait.
Yes.
Definitely a year too long of a wait for this.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you guys have any trouble keeping up with things, you should go check up on Bing, because Bing is for doing, and we are doing Game of Thrones, the after show. Had to shout it out. So, what do you guys think? It's back. What do you guys think of the first episode?
The North Remembers is the episode title.
Yes, The North Remembers.
I think it looks amazing. I think that the production value is just infinitely better. And I mean, who thought that last season it could even get better? But I think it totally did. I think the transitions from the different characters and the scenes and the houses was just so seamless and really smooth to watch. And the wolves. How about those
wolves? The dire wolves. They are all grown up now.
Yes.
They're getting a little bit bigger.
And a little bit CG action, maybe. What do you think about that, Simone?
I think they look great. I mean, you really, they look amazing, even down to the hairs bristling, and they look amazing.
A lot scarier.
Yeah.
And we definitely got a bunch of wolf sequences in this one. We got it with Robb Stark. We got it with Bran in his dream where he's dreaming of being a wolf.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Very cool to see that.
Something interesting about the wolves is the trainers actually said that they don't like when the dogs get so close to the characters on the show, because then they tend to goof off and not do what they're trained to do. So they actually don't want the dogs spending so much time with the actors.
That's fun. Yeah. That's fun to know.
They definitely did have some behavioral issues with the wolves last season, so that's why they decided to do the CGI thing. But, I mean, it looks amazing.
So, you know what I'm also wondering, though, is now that we have the dragons, and the dragons are here, and we see Daenerys playing with her dragon, and she's kind of hanging out, feeding her dragon, that's also CG. So how much...
Right.
Do you guys think this season costs a lot more than the last season?
Oh, absolutely.
Yes.
I definitely think so. I think you can tell, and they are going to have to use the dragons a lot more as the story progresses.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I can only imagine they're going to have to be shelling out quite a bit more cash.
I mean, I plan to get a dragon, just saying. And
yeah.
Sansa actually let me borrow her shirt for the episode this evening.
You can just, if you just watch the show and you can look, is it not the exact outfit she was wearing?
Pretty much.
Yes.
We
that
talked.
Opening scene.
She told me what to wear.
And by the way, shouldn't we point out what is in our after?
Yes. So you were kind enough to bring some mead. So we are drinking mead
wine.
Because what else would you have?
Celebrating Game of Thrones.
Cheers.
And to you, sir.
To both of you.
To a great season of Game of Thrones.
Ladies.
Yes. My lady.
who knows what I put in you guys' cups.
Whoa.
Maybe a little
poppy there. Poppy?
I don't really feel comfortable with where
milk
this is
the
going.
Poppy?
I do have one question for you guys, and this is, you know, me sitting in the booth and hearing everyone speak upon their favorite shows. So I know Simone is like a huge Game of Thrones fan, and I was working with you guys, and you guys recapped Luck. Mm-hmm. I just want to know from you two, Kristen and Dave, what is it about Game of Thrones that brought you there? You know, like I said, Simone, she's on YouTube with videos, and she is like a Game of Thrones fan. What is it for you guys?
I mean, everything.
Nice and simple.
So, no, I mean, it's great because I've always loved fantasy, and I'm also I'm a big gaming nerd, so I love that whole world. So anything where there's new worlds and new characters, so it's just he's created such an amazing world.
Yes.
And it's just the characters are so vivid and so alive and believable. They're real characters, and it's a character-driven story.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also, I'm not big into politics, but this is a political show, and I actually like it. I want to know the politics of what's going on and what they're doing.
It's quite surprising how similar it is to our real world right now with all
exactly.
this backstabbing and all that stuff. So, mm-hmm.
I mean, I really came to the show because I'm a traditional girl, and this show, you know, the different houses are actually based off traditional people, you know, and traditions of European, the Scandinavians, everyone sort of based off a different culture and also mixed with fantasy, but they find a way to make the fantasy real.
Yes.
Yeah.
With the immense production value and, I mean, even filming on at medieval castles in Northern Ireland, they said.
Yeah, it definitely makes it like a believable part of the world. Mm-hmm. You don't think it's this fantastical extension. It's just, it is the world, and it makes sense within
right.
this world that he's created.
I mean, my favorite part of the show, though, is like the characters and how complicated they are, because everyone has their own set of codes, like their own interests, and especially their own motivations. And we know they're all like their motivations, and we side with each character. It's hard to find one person to side with.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, as we know, you know, in the Game of Thrones, you either win or you die.
Yes.
And it's like, I feel like
as part
of the audience, we are just on the outside of arena watching them all battle each other, and none of them are safe. And that's the best part of this show.
Yeah.
Because you don't know when your favorite character is going to die, but you're
that's
just
totally
rooting
true.
For all of
oh,
them.
Like,
is there any show on television that's similar to this at all? Or is this
it's just the best TV
yeah,
show. There is
so.
Nothing that compares.
This is really the first time that we've gotten some amazing fantasy content on
mm-hmm.
television that's high budget and incredible. I mean, we've
right.
gotten great sci-fi shows. I'm a huge fan of a lot of sci-fi shows, Battlestar and Firefly, but this is fantasy. This is true fantasy. I mean, it's like Lord of the Rings every Sunday.
Yeah,
so
it is. It really is.
It's awesome. And you know what? It's very interesting what you said about this being sort of like our real world, because Peter Dinklage, the actor who plays Tyrion, HBO posted a video sort of getting everyone up to speed this season, and it was interesting because he said, you know, this show sort of blurs the lines between reality and fantasy,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of times in fantasy, there's especially people of his size have to fit into a certain mold. They have to be this comical sort of character, but this show enables him to, you know, be real and be whatever George wants him
yeah,
to be.
Yeah, and that's one of the great things, again, about George R.R. Martin's
yes.
writing is he just writes these great flawed characters, but they're so real, and his flaw that he's the imp is what makes us like him so much,
yes.
too, because he has
mm-hmm.
to become cunning and witty to make up for that.
Yes.
And something I wanted to mention, too, with what you'd said, Kristen, with the characters, was that he had said that when he wrote it, he wanted every single character to be that real, to be three-dimensional, so that you believe every single one of them has, as you said, their own motivations and their own intentions, and that it's not that there's any evil characters. They all have real reasons they want to do everything. It's not just black and white.
Mm-hmm. Totally. It's interesting to see how Cersei and Catelyn they're on two polar opposite sides of this world. They're fighting against each other, but yet they're both driven by a love of their children. They would do
right.
anything for
yeah.
their children. So
they could be friends.
Exactly. Yeah. if one hadn't been born uber rich and
if only they were both Starks.
Right.
Not Lannisters.
Or if they were both at the Night Watch.
Yes.
Oh.
I just, You know what? I feel like that's something we can all learn from the Night Watch. What if our whole world just came together as one greater realm and we were all fighting for the same reason and not against each other?
I don't know. Then I couldn't have sex with any girl, so I don't know.
What?
About that.
Oh, yeah, because if you're in the Night Watch, you know what I meant.
True.
I did not mean it like that. Come on.
Very appealing, right?
In the Night Watch, you can't be with a girl or be crowned.
I do love that about the Night Watch, though. That mm-hmm. really is. It's a society, it's a system where you are what you make yourself, and that's mm-hmm. great. And that's always cool to see. And especially in this world, it's one of the few places you can go to and make something of yourself.
It's
unless
you're
Littlefinger, who kind of did that for himself. But
yeah.
And also, they don't belong to any house. You know, they're not loyal to any one house. They are the protector of the realm.
Right. Which is, yeah, because they get people from everywhere. Like, you've got the Targaryens in there. You've got the Starks in there. And normally, they'd be huge enemies, but they're working together.
Mm-hmm.
So you've just got all these different houses together mm-hmm. in one place.
Okay, so getting into this episode, I just wanted to say it seemed like last season was mainly based around the Starks. And
yes.
this season seems like it's going to be mainly based around the Lannisters.
And can I actually throw out something I'm surprised about, too, with the start of the show since we're jumping into it? The beginning of the first season started with the prologue from the first book, Game mm-hmm. of Thrones. And I assumed that the second season would start with the prologue of the second book, which I've got here just for visual purposes, Clash of Kings.
What?
So I assumed that we would again get the introduction scene as the prologue to Clash of Kings, which didn't happen. We didn't get it until way later. And for those of you listening who aren't familiar with the books, that scene is where we're seeing the Baratheons. We're with Baratheons, and a lot of it was also different with Stannis Baratheon. They kind of changed it up, too, so there are changes, but I just assumed it'd be the prologue that we would get, and we didn't.
Yeah, the thing that people have to remember, I'm a huge fan of the books as well, but this is an adaptation, and now this season, George R. R. Martin is the executive producer. He was just a producer last season. So there are going to be definite changes, noticeable changes from the books. But, I mean, the author is at the helm of this, so there's no way, in my opinion, that it could get messed up. But yeah, there's totally going to be some changes like that.
Going off of what you said about him being the producer now and going to be changes, you know, they originally wanted to make it a film, but he's like, normally when you give something to Hollywood, the only thing they keep is the title and they change everything else. And he didn't want them to butcher his book into a film. And he's like, the only thing you can do with this is make it a series. And he told his agent to go to HBO.
Yeah.
And right now we have 5 1,000 pages books. I don't know how you would make that into one movie. So good on him for holding out, and good for us, because the show is so great. I'm glad he held out.
Yes.
So, Kristen, would you like to jump into the Lannisters, since you started us off?
Yeah, I mean,
and since you're in Sansa.
So, I am in Sansa's shirt, and right now we're at the birthday party of my husband, Joffrey.
Oh, Joffrey.
And who doesn't get a gladiator-type scene for their birthday? I mean, that's how my birthdays are.
Yeah.
Right?
Me
Why
too.
Have I not been to your birthdays yet? I want to be invited.
And you even look like Joffrey. Didn't we?
Dave is Joffrey. We were talking about which characters we were, and I had to be Joffrey. I guess I am an asshole, so that's okay. Whatever. You guys go on. I don't want to talk.
No.
I really want to be Khaleesi. That's what I was going for with, like, my bands and everything. But then I was wearing Sansa's shirt, so it just didn't work this time, but...
Next time.
Joffrey's birthday party.
Joffrey's birthday. So, you know, if he kills someone, he's going to have a year of bad luck. The Hound agrees with Sansa. And so they save Dontos Hollard.
And I'm going to be a huge book nerd here and point out a little well, it's not necessarily discrepancy. I think it's something that you wouldn't notice unless you'd read it. Because here when Sansa says it, you don't quite, I feel like, get her intentions. Mm-hmm. And in the book, the whole time, she is thinking, I just made that up. That is fake.
I got
the
that.
Whole name they think. Did you get that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because I don't know if you would have or not, but she just made that up. And for whatever reason, the Hound just goes, yeah, that's true. And so he totally sides with her.
I saw that she was manipulating Joffrey. I didn't know she made up the whole name day thing, so I'm glad you brought that up, Dave.
Yeah.
But I could totally tell she was manipulating Joffrey, and I think that's what she's going to do. She's going to play by his rules, pretendingly so.
Yes.
And I also see the Hound helping her out in the future
mm-hmm.
to maybe kill him? I don't know.
We're definitely going to see their relationship develop a little more, and that's sort of a dynamic relationship there. But I think it was really cool to see Sansa, you know, get a little bit of a backbone this season. I mean, for God's sake, Sansa. Like, I don't know.
She could have just pushed Joffrey there. She was so close last season.
The Hound totally stopped her from pushing him.
Yeah. It's hard to say what I would do in her position, but come on, Sansa. She just is pathetic sometimes. I'm sorry.
I guess, like, sometimes it's like, and this is a good quote from the book from Tyrion. Tyrion was talking to her, and she says, he mentions to her that you're a deer surrounded by wolves, is what he basically tells her. And she mutters, I'm surrounded by lions. But yeah. It's sort of that thing where it's like, what are you going to do? Your father's dead. You are alone. You're surrounded by lions. So it's like, she kind of has to play along in a sense. Otherwise, she doesn't know that she's
either win or you die, Dave. She's going to play.
She's playing the game.
You have to play. You play or you die.
Yeah, that's very true. I don't know. I guess I probably would have run away by now, but...
I would have died.
Yeah. Maybe.
Or got my tongue cut off.
Yeah.
Lots of tongues being cut off.
Yes.
So then we also... So after that, we move on to Tyrion. Tyrion comes in.
Yes.
And he's introduced, and he pretty much marches... full confidence in there, like, what's up, Joffrey? Get out of my way. Get out the way, Joffrey.
Gotta love Tyrion.
I mean, everyone thought he was dead, and he's like, death? Death is so boring. Life is so full of adventures.
He's
for
got
me.
A great line for everything. I think that's why
I'm
going to
be quoting
Tyrion.
Him all season.
Tyrion.
FYI.
Yes.
Peter Dinklage, you're the best. And Tyrion.
Yes.
We need to get him on here.
Emmy.
Look for that.
Emmy winning.
Yes.
Peter Dinklage.
Yes, Emmy winning and Golden Globe winning.
Yes.
Right? Yeah.
Show picked up several awards while we were on hiatus.
So another thing here was a little different, too, where Tyrion comes in and he has a little bit more trouble getting in there with Cersei at first.
Mm-hmm.
And they almost don't let him in to talk to Cersei. And she doesn't believe the letter at all at first.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the show, we see that he kind of right away gets in there and he has much more confidence than in the books. But he's just like... balling and being like, what's up, guys?
He's like, I'm the hand of the king, bitches.
What's up? <Yeah. laughs> You know what I really like about him is his keen understanding of human nature, and I think that's what Tywin, his father, sees in him, and that's why he makes him hand of the king.
Yeah. I mean, we did see at the end of season one, Tywin, even though he hated him, not only for being the imp, but also for... Tywin's wife dying at birth, giving birth to the imp, or Tyrion, that he's finally starting to recognize Tyrion, that, you know, you're actually kind of smart. I never really realized it before.
You know, he says he's a slave to the truth, and the truth actually weighs him down, and that's why he's so short. I mean, I'm kind of not sure whose side he's on either. I mean, they kind of question him. I saw in the previews, like, I often wonder whose side you're on. And I, too, wonder whose side he's going to be on. Because even in this episode, we see him saying to Sansa, you know, he was kind of talking about her father and saying, I'm sorry about your father.
You know what? It's also, when you're mentioning that, in season one, one of the very first episodes, we had Jaime Lannister questioning Tyrion, too, like, sometimes I wonder what side you're on. And that's like one of the first episodes of the season. So we definitely start off with that of who exactly is he playing for? But as you said, slave of the truth. So
Slave of the truth. If that reigns true, then I'm going to like him even more. And I feel like he's not going to be on the Lannister side because it doesn't seem like they side with the truth very much.
It's not their strong suit, I would say. But you've got Jaime Lannister, who obviously his strength is in his hands and in his sword.
Yeah.
And Cersei
and his good looks.
Yeah, that's true.
That's my lie there.
Cersei's strength is between her legs. Let's get it out there. But Tyrion, we're starting to see, I mean, we saw last season, of course, but we're starting to see that his strength could be greater than either of those combined. It's in his mind.
And it's, you know what? It's funny that you bring that up, too, because it's almost exactly what Littlefinger is talking about in his argument with Cersei in this episode. Is Littlefinger's point to Cersei, and they have that great exchange, but his point is that knowledge is power, and she goes, no, power is power.
Yes.
After showing that she can just execute
him
right
there. She was like, slit his throat. And what did you guys think right then? I mean, I know you know because we've been reading the books, but in that moment, did you think it was going to go off the books and they were really going to kill him?
Well, that scene wasn't actually in the books. Yeah, that's one of those where they sort of add in stuff, which, I mean, it always comes out great. But yeah, I love the way that turned out because Cersei definitely made her point. Power is power. She said it.
Yeah. And
what do you guys think? Do you guys think power is power? Or do you think knowledge is power?
I have to say, I don't know. That's a tough one.
That's tough now. Yeah. So I guess in that moment, power is power. But I think overall, knowledge is power because Tyrion's playing it up. And Littlefinger kind of just chose his words not so wisely, even though he was playing what he usually plays, which is someone threatens him with knowledge. And he goes, well, guess what? I have this knowledge I can drop on you, too. So he definitely, you know, plays that out. And it's just, that's just his character sometimes.
Mm-hmm. No, I totally agree.
So then we also have Tyrion with his lovely lady.
Yes.
Shay.
Which is different from the books as well here. Because originally, Shay is kind of discovered. Tyrion's pissed
off. I feel
like
she's so mysterious, though. I mean, what is her background? I feel like she actually ran away from a home with a lot of money, and she's a princess or queen.
Well, it's funny to me because in the very beginning, Varys in the books has discovered her in the books. And in the show, all we get is Tyrion being like, don't get found out that you're here.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe Tywin's going to come into conflict there. But it's just like, it's also a fun exchange with that and seeing what Tyrion's trying to do. And he's finally disobeying Tywin.
Tywin doesn't like Shay one bit. He's made that very clear to Tyrion from the beginning. So, but Shay is obviously happy to be in King's Landing. She's kind of coming into her own.
Do you think this is another one that was paid just to be his lady? I mean, we found out that in season one, how the only girl he ever loved, there was a whole setup, and then they killed her.
Well, I don't think Shay has been paid, but she is a whore, after all.
And
so
she also, mysterious. And the prospect of being the whore of the Hand of the King, or the whore of a random merchant, or not merchant, but like the whore of a random camp going through, what is your better option? I don't know.
Yeah, I think I'll take the Hand of the King. Sounds a little better. Go on.
Speaking of whores.
Yes, Roz.
We got Roz, who's wasn't even in the books, but she has become.
She's queen of the. She's like queen. Yeah,
yeah,
madam.
She's
the madam of the brothel.
Yes, queen of the slut brigade. She's gotten a little more plump. It seems like she's really, you know,
yeah,
coming to her own there.
Hopefully she doesn't have a bastard child inside of her.
Oh. Yes.
Oh, as we saw.
Nice segue. Yeah.
So we see that Joffrey has the King's Watch sent out to kill all the bastard children because he feels threatened that one of them are going to come to be rightful owner of the throne. Because as we see him tell his mother, I heard a nasty rumor, he tells Cersei.
Yeah.
Speaking of that little exchange, Cersei, I mean, how dare Joffrey? Joffrey is just unbelievable.
Man.
Well, she says, you know, our enemy will say anything to weaken our claim to the throne. Mm-hmm. And he's like, our claim? It's all in how you say things, right? Mm-hmm. And it was quite obvious to him that he's not supposed to be king of the throne.
Well, what's funny is, at least in that exchange, it seems like he's more hinting at the fact that there's bastards. And for whatever reason, he doesn't seem to pick up that he might not even be a son. Because at first, that's what it seemed like he was hinting at. And then he goes, the bastards. That's what I'm talking about.
Well, I almost feel like he's trying to ignore it as much as he can and just sort of push it aside and not actually acknowledge that his uncle could be his daddy.
Yeah. Who wants to acknowledge that?
Yeah. This gets a little weird.
And then at some point, his mother slaps him in the face when he
says, he deserved it.
Another Joffrey slap.
Yes.
I love those Joffrey
slaps. Can we get a YouTube meme going on with this one now?
Yes, exactly. A little
English
gif.
One. Boom, boom.
Yes. Nice.
But, you know, that is punishable by death, so he basically threatens to kill his mother if she does it again.
What nerve.
For real.
Seriously, he is just,
real.
Like, becoming. He's always been a dick. He's just rising in dickness.
He is. His dick meter is like up to the top.
Here's Sir Dickness.
Maybe we should talk about Daenerys, our little dragon mother.
Sure. Let's move on to Daenerys.
Okay.
In the Red Waste, mm-hmm. Trying to feed her dragons. Now, this is... Daenerys as a dragon mother is something that is going to be so fun to watch because she doesn't... I mean, who knows anything about raising dragons?
Well, clearly not Viserys. Yes. I mean, we can say that.
Yes.
She said, the only thing my brother told me was that they eat meat. Really? They eat meat?
Oh, thanks, Viserys.
I thought they were vegetarians.
But what meat is she feeding them?
Probably horse meat, if I had to guess.
I guess. Horses, I mean, her final... her first gift from Khal Drogo, maybe that is now... sadly going to be dragon
yes,
food.
Yes, her silver.
Something fun to bring up and interesting for you is the stunt horses were actually trained. Some were trained to just fall over, and then that's the one thing they do. Some were trained to roll over. And, of course, in this scene, we see one just fall.
Yeah, I wonder, that's such a weird thing to think that you're teaching horses how to fall, and they're totally cool with that, I guess. They're like, okay, as long as you give me carrots, I'll learn how to fall. Yeah, Chris and I just got off of Luck where there were multiple horse deaths.
Oh, I heard about this, yes.
So fortunately, like, there's a lot of horses in Game of Thrones. So fortunately, there's nothing like that going on in Game of Thrones because I don't want Game of Thrones to get canceled.
Yeah,
like,
right?
No.
Maybe Luck should have used more stunt horses rather than more racing horses.
Right. And that's just more of a racing horse thing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so great pointer. Yeah, so... good to know, and hopefully they'll be trained and not die, please.
So the dragons are too weak to fight.
Yes.
Khaleesi, or Daenerys is. Khaleesi actually means queen in the Dothraki language. And her people are too weak, too. So we see Jorah actually tell her, you're going to have to be the strength here.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to make a decision, and you need to do something. And then we see her send her men out in all different directions.
Yes, and they're hopefully going to bring back tidings of where this vast red waste ends and what lies on the outskirts of it.
And so they've been heading east, which is, I guess you think they'd be heading west, but they can't head west because that's where the Dothraki are.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still kind of weird that they're heading east to me. I figured they'd be heading towards the coast. But they're not.
I think they want to be. I mean, they're in search for anything right now. She's like, if you find lakes, let me know. If you find people, let me know. I mean, they are just like riding out on the red wasteland looking for anything because she doesn't know how far or how much further her people can go.
Mm-hmm. Or how to even feed her dragons properly.
She's going to learn. She's going to learn.
You know what? She is like the woman rising. We've seen her be weak. We've seen her take over. And now she's rising up as this queen. And she's the only Targaryen left.
Mm-hmm.
And now she has dragons. And hopefully they will be ready for winter.
You know, I think you're right. I think she might be one of the characters so far in the show. Her arc has progressed the most.
Yes.
Where she, as you said, was the weakest. And she completely changed by the end of the first season, since she's still progressing. So we're really seeing that arc moving forward.
And it's going to be interesting to see how they change her journey from the book, because in the book, she didn't really have too much going on. There was a lot of wandering, a lot of traveling, but not too much progression of her story. But you touched on something that is one of the main themes that I love about Game of Thrones, which is the strong female roles that we have in Cersei, whether you love her or you hate her, in Daenerys, in Catelyn. So I just love that. It's hard to find a story, much less a fantasy story.
And
Thank you, the Slut Brigade. Yes. It's hard to find a story in Hollywood, much less a fantasy story, that has these strong female roles. So as a female, I love it.
I do, too. I feel more powerful watching Game of
Thrones. Yes, right?
As a male, I'm afraid. What's happening to our society?
You win or you die.
When the women take over, what happens?
We're playing the game of genders.
Two women, one host, that's a male. What will happen this season on AfterBuzz?
Tune in next time.
When we bring our knives and dragons, what will Dave bring to the show?
My cunning and wit. Knowledge is power.
Yeah. No, power is power.
What? Whatever, girls on this side. Two girls.
Whoa, I'm sensing some animosity. This is getting a little heated.
So if I'm Joffrey,
all right,
then you're
back
Cersei.
To Game of Thrones.
Thank you, Ronnie. Back to Game of Thrones.
Okay, I think
they just have a little thing, that's all.
I'm like feeling powerful from Game of Thrones. I'm empowered now.
Speaking of power, let's talk about the King of the North.
Yes, Rob, King of the North, self-proclaimed.
Oh,
no, I guess not.
Not really
self-proclaimed. Great John Umber actually said, I will only follow the King of the North.
The King of the North.
And now they want to be separate. Which I understand.
Yeah, you know, they're not even asking to take the Iron Throne. They just want to be, they just want independence.
Right, mm-hmm. And they want to maintain the North, which they have for several years now. I love that exchange between Rob and Jaime.
Oh, wow.
You see Rob, it's sort of a power shift there. You see Rob is a little overconfident now that he's gotten word that Jaime has fathered the bastard children of King's Landing. And
everyone's finding out now.
Yeah,
so they sent like a raven to every corner of the earth, to all the corners where the kings are.
Yeah, they literally did. Stannis sends out this message to everyone. Sort of
my
airing the dirty laundry.
I think
of the
this is my favorite quote from this episode is Jaime saying, "You don't know my father," and Rob replies, "No, but he's starting to know me."
Mm-hmm.
I love that.
A little
quote.
Overconfident, in my opinion. I mean, he has won a lot of battles.
He has three victories. What do you mean?
It's better than three defeats.
Yeah.
Ew.
Yeah, and we got Grey Wind in that scene.
Yeah, CG.
Which looks awesome.
I'm scared. I thought he was at least going to nibble off Jamie's nose.
Yeah, but he didn't.
But he's definitely pulling
him.
That like power of like, I've got this. I've got my dire wolf with me.
Yeah.
Let's at least like send Jamie's arm back to his father. Let's send his ear. Let's cut off something. Come on.
Yeah.
I mean, they send out the messenger with like his peace treaty, whatever, with all his different demands.
Talk
but
about a peace treaty. That is one hell of a, I don't even think you call it a peace treaty. It's just a treaty.
Demands.
Yeah,
demands. Which he knows.
Yeah.
I mean,
they are winning the war.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think they're being smart about it, too, because they want to create a relationship with Renly, because they don't care about the South, and they basically want to go to Renly and say, you can take the South, we will side with you.
Mm-hmm.
And then Rob wants to side with Theon Greyjoy.
And his father with the ships.
And his father, even though that's kind of, I mean, so, you know, maybe you killed me, my family, and took
started
me prisoner,
the rebellion.
And, hey, I don't know if that's going to work, as Catelyn points out. But, you know, it's...
I think it's a good idea.
A little
for right now.
A little nerve-wracking.
It's nerve-wracking, but at the same time, you can see where the thought is of...
Mm-hmm. Having Theon ships.
Theon and him are good friends.
Yeah, Rob,
they are friends. Rob trusts him, and, you know, he was even one of the ones who, when Umber was yelling out, King of the North, he was also being like, King of the North, so...
Rob's heart is in the right place.
Yeah.
So
something to point out, though, Greyjoy was raised by Ned Stark. How much does he really know his father? Like, in thought, all sounds great.
Yes.
Right.
But I don't think he knows his father.
Yeah. Imagine being away from your home for that long. You wouldn't know your family. You wouldn't recognize your family.
3 years so far from me.
Yeah,
that's how long I've been in LA.
That's really great
Hi,
to know,
pretty
Dave.
Close, yeah.
Hi.
Hey guys, haven't seen you in 3 years, but hope you're doing well.
We're keeping him.
Oh, okay.
Prisoner of LA.
Power is power.
So then we also see with the Sparks, Bran is taking on being Lord of Winterfell.
Yeah.
Listening
little,
to people.
Little lordling.
The little lord. We got a lot of little lords here.
Yeah.
Joffrey,
he is with
Bran.
Little lordlings running everywhere.
So Bran is with Maester Luwin.
Yeah.
And they're listening to people they would rather not listen to.
Yes.
Sometimes as a lord, you need to listen to people you'd rather not listen to.
I'm glad I'm not a lord.
Right.
I would not want to do that.
So
all they want is some stonemasons, Kristen. They just want some stonemasons.
And some grain.
I guess.
I don't know.
And Roderick is actually being sent to watch over Bran and Rickon, his younger brother.
The two little princes.
You know, I'm surprised we didn't see Rickon at all in this episode.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised, too.
He's in the dungeons running around with his dog.
Yeah, he's just playing around with the shaggy dog.
Yeah, just oblivious to all the hell that's going on in the world.
And we see the comet that, you know, Bran thinks, oh, this means that Rob is going to win. And Osha, the wildling, says, no, the only stars are not for men. The only sign that the comet is for is it means dragons.
And it is a funny wrap-up because in the book, you have it. That's kind of how they tie all the houses together, is all their thoughts of what could it possibly mean. Because everybody has a different prediction of what the Red Comet means.
Mm-hmm.
But here they kind of all tied it just to Osha, who in the book she also said it meant dragons. But she has her explaining all the rumors. Like, these are the rumors, but this is what it really means.
Mm-hmm.
Which we know as viewers is the truth, because we have seen those dragons.
Yes, we do. I love that the comet was used as sort of a unifying visual, because, like you said in the books, it's really one of the only things in this universe that has brought everyone together. I mean, everyone can see it from wherever they are. So
that's a great point.
Yeah, it kind of reminds us that these people do coexist, mm-hmm. no matter how much they hate each other.
And that way it really translated from the book to mm-hmm. in the sky and still uniting everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the thing is also with them coexisting and what you were saying about characters are characters, it really just seems like at the end of the day, all they all care about are their families. And that's really what it comes down to, is just they just care about their families, and that's mm-hmm. what makes them so human. And the other thing that unifies them, where Cersei and Catelyn could in an alternate world be friends,
mm-hmm.
not in this world.
Right.
But let's move to
the
another
Watch?
Family. Yes, the Night's Watch family.
The Black Castles. And here we're staying at Craster's house. Who,
old Craster's Keep.
And he marries his daughters, all of his daughters, and he is their husband.
But what does he do with the sons?
No one
I knows. Think, I think maybe I saw a hand in one of those cooking pots.
Oh, girl. Where does he get all of his meals? Hmm.
They seem to be all a little, like, plump.
This is a fat plump baby.
They would probably need the meat, so I'm going to guess he eats those.
Craster is a creep. Let's just get it out there.
Yeah.
He's a creepy old man.
You have all your men. I'm surrounded by girls. That's what's up.
Yeah. Yeah, you chose a path with boys, he says to Gior. So,
yeah.
But you know what? I like how Gior kind of walks over to Snow and he's like, you know, who are you? At one point you're going to lead, but you also need to learn to follow. And
yes.
I think that's true for most leaders.
Yeah, it's going to be so cool to see Jon Snow's journey as they sort mm-hmm. of, and just this journey of the Night's Watch, because where we left off last season, it was this major cliffhanger. They're just sort of all riding off into the mysterious north. No one knows what could be awaiting them up there. Mm-hmm.
Jon Snow, if you ever do get out of the Night's Watch,
call me.
Yeah.
Call me.
Call me.
So cute.
Yeah, I know. Even the Lord thought he was cute. Might be cuter than my daughters, actually.
Yeah, I'm going to side with
him
there.
He's got that hair. He's got that hair working for him.
We learn about Mans Raider, who is king of the wildlings, and he's marching south with his army.
Kristen, don't you mean have him send a raven to you? Let's just be in the world here.
Yeah, Jon Snow, send a raven my way.
Oh my god, Jon Snow sent me a raven last night.
Jon Snow, send me a raven, please, too. I mean,
do you have any?
Might be with Renly.
What?
Come on, whatever, you might get that. If you don't get it, look it up. Bing it, okay?
So yes, Mance Raider. I love how the Stark motto, Winter is Coming, is like, it's I don't know. It's just, it's a big, very true motto, and we're going to kind of see how that comes into play.
We didn't really see the White Raven in this one. The White Raven was in the book where everybody finds out it's the symbolizer that winter is in fact coming. It's not just the Stark saying it is coming, but we don't see it here.
They brought in a bird in the beginning and said that summer's going to be longer or something in the beginning, but we didn't see it being white, actually.
In the beginning of this episode?
Yeah. They brought in a bird and said that summer's going to be longer when all the councilmen were sitting there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So I think you're right. I guess it was there in a way, but so it wasn't just the White Raven. I just visualized that as something that would be a big factor, which wasn't.
Okay, and our last sea story before we get into a commercial would be Stannis. Do you guys?
Stannis Baratheon.
And the priestess.
Yes.
And again, this was the prologue in the book, and this was a long... This was totally different. I don't even know. You guys talk about it, because it was so different.
Well, he draws his sword from the fire.
Lightbringer.
Boom.
Right. And Melisandre is the priestess. And I don't know what's going on with her. She seems like more of a witch.
Yeah.
I mean, she's bringing the one god. Instead of having your seven gods, and we have a little bit of a religious dispute going on here.
Sort of like our real world.
Yes, sort of like the real world, where she's saying instead of these seven gods, there's the one god of the light. Mm-hmm. And she's talking about that right now they're in the darkness, so he has to pull the sword. And we have Crescent. Crescent is all about the old ways. Crescent is the maester of Dragonstone, and he just wants everything to be the way it was. He doesn't think Crescent should go to war. He thinks Crescent is being stupid for going to war. Or sorry, thank you, Stannis.
It's easy.
Thank you. Yeah. I was talking about Crescent. So Crescent thinks Stannis is stupid for going to war, and he thinks the only way to stop this is by poisoning Melisandre, because he thinks Melisandre is poison. If he can get rid of her, Stannis will see the light.
But he can't.
But he can't. But in the book, Melisandre is even more of a witch because she drinks the poison first and just she thinks it's poison, just hands it to him like, what's up with that? And he has to drink it now. And then in the show, she drinks it second, but still drinks it after we see him bleeding from the nose. So it's still like, I know.
So apparently she drinks poison every day and she's become immune to it.
She's been training for this her whole life as a fiery red priestess.
The Princess Bride. That's what it is. It's the Princess Bride.
Yes.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Stannis' relationship with Melisandre, because he is married to Lady Celeste. So let's not forget that. But his wife hasn't actually brought him any sons, so he's kind of peeved with her. But Melisandre and Stannis have this weird sort of relationship that's very, very strange.
I mean, I just feel like she's feeding him everything of what to do. And do you think that he is perhaps under a spell?
Well, the other thing, though, is that when she's in the books, and she's not even in the show, at least this episode so far, but in the book, she basically is telling Stannis, too, that you're powerful. Stop listening to Crescent. You're the man. You should be king, too. So she also kind of agrees with Melisandre, too. So Melisandre is just, like, poisoning everybody.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Way about her.
The Red Lady.
If you guys had to pick a religion from Game of Thrones, you've got the old gods where you go to the godswood and pray. You've got the
they
seven.
They bleed.
Yes, they do. And you've got Melisandre's god. Which one would you pick?
I'm going to the trees, the Starks. They're the most traditional, and I feel like that's more of a spiritual nature goddess. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, that's what I believe in, like a greater god, you know?
Well, I'm Jewish, so being that I, in a way, do already pray to the old god, now I'm going to go with the old gods, the Starks. Those gods, but still the old gods, so there.
I guess I'm going to be the only one to go with the Lord of Light.
Oh,
bam.
Wow.
Bring some light.
Yeah. I don't know. Just
why?
I think maybe Melisandre's confidence is just alluring. She's got this like
she's weaving the spell on you too.
But it's very witchy.
I'm
witchy.
Under the spell.
Witchy.
Simone's Wiccan. You're Wiccan now.
No.
Okay. So I think we should take a commercial, guys, and come back with a special edition.
Ooh.
After Buzz TV.
Hi, I was once like you. A lazy, angry loner whose only joy was watching TV and surfing the net. And, like you, after I'd see one of my favorite TV shows, I'd be so excited and have so many questions that I'd actually have to talk to my douchebag coworkers about it at the water cooler. Then I discovered AfterBuzzTV.com. AfterBuzzTV produces after-show webcasts and podcasts for TV series of all kinds, like post-game wrap-up shows for all your favorite TV shows. AfterBuzzTV hosts are industry insiders who break down episodes of shows, take calls from fans, and interview cast and crew from each series with over 60 different aftershows, from Boardwalk Empire to American Idol to Vampire Diaries to Real Housewives and more. Now, after a night of TV, I can ignore my stupid coworkers, who I hate, and go straight to my desk and watch or listen to all my favorite AfterBuzz TV aftershows and have all the TV fan interaction I need. Thank you, AfterBuzz TV.
AfterBuzz TV. What do you want to buzz about?
Kristen wants to buzz about a special report.
Special edition!
I don't know if I have music.
Special edition! Where's my music? Okay, I think that's good.
We got you covered. We got you covered.
That's your music. And go.
Just record it.
Okay, so what show actually goes to the Language Creation Society to have a language created for their show? In the first season, HBO went to David J. Peterson, who is a professor, and had him actually create the Dothraki language. And he came up with about 2,000 words, and they would literally send him the script, and he would translate it for them. He would record, you know, MP3s for them to listen to. But a lot of the actors had to learn the lines also in English first, so they knew what kind of emotion to put into it. And the language is said to be a combination of Arabic and German. And there are more words for kill than love, believe it or not, for the Dothrakis.
For the Dothraki, that makes sense.
Yeah. And the language was just meant to represent their world and their beliefs.
And they don't have a word for throne. Either.
They or don't. Thank you.
Or thank you. Yeah.
Yeah. So. Because those are weak words.
Yeah. That's so cool, though. That's crazy that they actually invented a language for the show. So it mm-hmm. wasn't even in the book, but they did it for the show.
And I don't know, did it sound a little French tonight to you guys on the show?
The Dothraki language?
Yeah.
I don't know.
It had an air of...
Well, it's very... very expressive.
Yes.
I will say that.
Maybe that's what it is.
So I think they... I was so busy reading the subtitles that I don't know.
Yeah.
I think that it's expressiveness of the Dothraki language, and because the people there are so emotional and expressive in their language and anger and power... It kind of reminds me of the French language because they're all like loving in their language and very emotional with their language.
Just the opposite, the opposite of French in a sense. Mm-hmm. So it sounds like the opposite because it's all death and killing.
Yes.
Not the language of love, the language
so,
of death.
Moving to gossip,
let's
I think
do some
you
news
both...
report. Can I get a news report?
Oh!
TV news.
Bam.
Okay, so. For those of you who know Sir Gregor Clegane, also known as The Mountain, the actor who played him in the first season, Conan Stevens, will not be returning to the second season due to scheduling conflicts. He will be replaced by Ian White. So, hopefully he'll be as good and as someone to be afraid of. Don't mess with his toys. Please do not mess with his toys. He will throw you in the fire and kill you.
We'll burn your
and
face.
Burn your face off.
Yes.
So I think you had one too, right, Simone?
Yes. I heard from my little birds that Jason Momoa could be making a small appearance in the second season of Game of Thrones, and it may be a little flashback in Daenerys' mind. Mm.
I don't think we really had any flashbacks in the first season.
No.
Well,
I think there actually was going to be one, and they cut it out for timing purposes. They were going to show the Mad King Aerys in the first season. Mm-hmm. They decided to cut it for timing.
Aerys.
I gotta pronounce it right.
Yeah, sorry guys. Ahead of time for any pronunciation errors.
We know how to say it. We're just throwing them out all at the same time.
Yeah, so fast.
Click, click, click.
All right, predictions.
Let's get some prediction, Ronnie Jr. Ooh.
Yeah.
And now, your AfterBuzz TV predictions.
So something that we didn't touch on in this episode, and is also coming back, it seems like, in other episodes, is Bran's dreams.
Yes.
Yeah. What do you guys think about those? And he says that the differences, they're actually true, and he knows them to be true. So are they kind of like omens or predictions?
I mean, he's becoming a direwolf day by day in his dreams.
Yeah, it's interesting because in the book, there are two characters that really sort of facilitate Bran's dreams, but mm-hmm. they're not in the season. They haven't been cast yet. They may come into season 3, but I love Bran's dream sequences. I think they're really cool to watch, and I was surprised to see one so early in the season. I didn't think that we'd get one.
Well, it is at the very beginning of the book, though, so I guess that makes sense. Like, at the very beginning, he's talking about his direwolf dream, so... I guess they have to introduce it. So, because you only see a brief glimpse of it in this mm-hmm. first episode. He's just looking in a pond. And so you don't really get any meaning behind it yet. It's just, okay, he had a dream about being a direwolf. And that was it so far, because he's seeing his reflection.
Mm-hmm. So do you think his dreams are going to guide his decisions at Winterfell?
I mean, it's got to. And then we also have Arya shown a lot, which we didn't get to see, or Aerys.
Yes, we didn't get to see him.
Yeah.
And she's my favorite character.
Gendry. I see her pairing up with Gendry, the bastard's son.
It was fun. That's what they really built it up for, too, for this next one.
Yes.
To have it. We are searching mm-hmm. for Gendry. We're going to find him. Good things
and
out of it.
Yes. And Ari. And a Lannister always pays her debts, and war is coming to their doorstep.
Yes.
Yes, it is. So exciting. Can't wait for episode 2. But you guys can catch me. I am Dave Klein again. You can catch me on Twitter @TheDaveKlein or DJK-online.com.
And I am Kristen Snyder, and you can Google cinematicescape.com or Cinematic Escape on Twitter.
And I'm Simone Boyce, and you can catch me at Simone Boyce on Twitter and also on winteriscoming.net doing weekly Game of Thrones recaps.
Oh. Like this one.
Yes.
Boo.
Thanks, guys. Can't wait till next week.
Join us again.
From Bing.com, executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later!
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principal.